We did some stories about Subway's experimentation with mobile marketing. What they're specifically doing is they are using a franchisee in New York who is essentially giving out electronic coupons through cell phones, which is nothing unusual, either the 50% off coupons or the free sandwich coupons. But they have been having wonderfully impressive results in terms of 50% response on their free sandwich offers, which is unheard of in any of the other marketing techniques they've gotten into. They're just experimenting with mobile marketing right now and seeing where the cell phones can go. But they are very concerned about privacy intrusions and consumer backlash. So they're experimenting, but they're doing it very carefully and in very, very isolated segments. Malpura, I know you've been doing some work in that area, looking at some of the pros and cons. How bad is it for a retailer today if they overstep?
When you look at email marketing, I think that the backlash could be very, very similar. So long as it's permission-based and there is clear opt-in and there is opportunities to opt out and it's not unnecessary spam that's just being pushed out to the consumer, there's tremendous benefit that can be derived from mobile marketing. But the fine line is to not over-market to people who don't want to be marketed to not simply just acquire lists or to gather lists that you may already have from other parts of your multi-channel strategy and just simply to bombard people who haven't expressed explicitly an interest in receiving messaging from you. There could, you know, once you kind of go down that path, it gets to be a very, very slippery slope. You really, really alienate so many different consumers. Other retailers see you doing it and think that they can do it as well, and they go overboard, and it ends up into this vicious cycle and the spiral of consumers who just then really resent marketing as a whole.
Actually, if I can jump in, you've got a very good point, Sucharita, and I think that's supported by some of the Jupiter research that we've done when we've asked consumers about their attitudes towards SMS marketing. And in fact, 80% of consumers say that there is nothing that would motivate them to provide their cell phone number to receive promotional offers. Hmm. Now, that number goes way down when you talk to 18 to 24-year-olds who are the most dominant SMS users of the population. It goes down to 63%. But still, that's two-thirds of the population who doesn't want to be marketed to yet. So the privacy issues are very key at this point. And I think the lessons that many, at least progressive retailers, have learned with their email strategies is, yes, aggressively collect emails, aggressively collect phone numbers, and get that permission-based marketing. But then, once you do that, you really, really have to be relevant to those customers, or else you're going to lose them pretty fast.
One of the more interesting points that was mentioned in some of the Forrester research was the idea that consumers may think that they would not want to do that, but if you put the right incentive, such as we will cover all or at least a portion of your phone costs if you let us do that, or we're going to give you very specifically targeted items. I think in the early days, even Amazon was getting indications that consumers would find it intrusive if you suggested books until they actually did it, and consumers embraced the idea. Do you think consumers will actually rebel, or do you think they will only rebel at the concept, but they may warm to it?
It's still early on consumer adoption of this kind of thing, but if you make my cell phone bill go away and all I have to do is look at ads, similar to the television model, then, yes, many consumers may actually adopt that. At this point, in their understanding of the way things work, I think there's still fear about, are these messages going to cost me something in addition to what I'm already paying? So if you take that total expense away, certainly that's a huge incentive to consumers to actually see your ads.
When I was in Europe, I was using, I took a world phone with me, and I was kind of shocked at the number of SMS messages that carriers were sending me suggesting that I'd switch my network, and I didn't quite know what to make of it, you know. I mean, it was literally, you're here, you don't need to be on the network you're on, come to ours. And it was really junk mail. I mean, I've typically been bullish on the use of cell phones for some permission-based marketing, because I think consumers are going to be using them anyway to do price checks of their own. But it was really disconcerting to get all of those messages while I was over in the UK.
There is a huge opportunity to really go in the wrong direction with SMS messaging is if metrics aren't put in place and if standards aren't put in place by both the telecom companies as well as marketers themselves, and there's not some sort of a price to entry that marketers have to pay for this, there's really there's a high likelihood that there'll be abuse of the vehicle.
Yeah, and you know it is interesting too that the development of this technology is widely different, or at least the development of the use of this technology is widely different across the world than it is in the United States.
Right.
And it's kind of funny because in Europe the privacy laws and the direct mail laws or regulations are in many cases much stricter than they are here in the United States, whereas the use of SMS for you know, in Paula's pretty brash example, sort of shows that has a different development path, and so we may see different regulations being put in the United States in post sort of Europe's experience in SMS.
The other element, and we had talked with Subway about the possibility, is that you go beyond the standard ads and the standard discount coupons, and you can get some fairly confrontational techniques, including location information, such as you're two blocks away from a Subway that you've never visited, why don't you drop by, which is something they were actually talking about. How far can we go? We go far beyond coupons and ads into actually using the information from cell phones. How do you think that's going to end up going over, even assuming we go with permission-based?
I think it really depends on the segment of the consumer that you're targeting, and that's where it's really important to capture as much of the data about a consumer's willingness to receive this information up front, if possible. We really find in the numbers that we have that there's a segmentation amongst the consumer set in general, and there are some segment of consumers that cannot stand receiving messaging from any marketers in any form. But there are a substantial segment, and the data that we have shows that if you're an online buyer and you buy within a certain category, usually the percents around a third of those buyers like to hear from their from the retailers that are in the category that they've purchased from. They like to hear from those retailers at least once a week, and they're comfortable with that. So if you're able to find those consumers and push the messages out to them, that's relevance. That's the relevance that Patty was talking about. And I think that for those consumers, there's not going to be the backlash that you see. The problem is going to come when you creep into those consumers who don't want to receive it, which is often what marketers do because, you know, they haven't captured that information on who's willing to receive the message in the first place.
Yeah, and it's a numbers game too, right? Because you're looking for the broadest reach possible, broadest and most effective reach possible. And many retailers are loath to reduce the numbers of people they may be communicating to because it'll then, of course, you know, potentially reduce their ultimate return. But by reducing and targeting to the messages, then retailers actually have a better chance of avoiding that backlash that Sucharita talked about.
Now, one of the things that retailers are trying to do to at least minimize the likely backlash is looking at buy-in or opt-in approaches. One of the concerns that some have pointed out is that there is so much opt-in going on out there, so much fine print on the back of a form opt-in, that it's become meaningless, that consumers are opting in for things they don't necessarily understand. They're agreeing to it the same way they agree to the license terms on a piece of software. If we get to the point where the opt-ins are not meaningful, that people are not knowingly signing off to that, is that going to be a problem when they start seeing this material and they say, I didn't knowingly agree to that. I probably signed something 2 months ago without even realizing it. How much of an issue is that likely to be?
I mean, I've had that happen to me already, and it was not a small thing. It was actually some comment that someone told me that I had agreed to sign up for some consumer protection, and I only happened to check my credit card bill. And by the time it was all added up, they had charged me, I got back like $2,000. They'd been charging me money every month for 3 years, and they had no record that I had actually signed up for it.
Wow.
They said that I had verbally agreed to it on a phone call.
Okay. That's a pretty loose opt-in, isn't it?
It wasn't a small company either. I mean, it was. It's kind of shocking, actually. Yeah, it was a very loose opt-in that I'd agreed, and then when I said, what the heck is this, they said, well, did you have hurricane damage last year? And I said, no, I didn't have hurricane. I mean, what difference does it make? Well, you could have used the service. And I said, give me my money back. And I had no idea how much it was. And it literally came to almost $2,000. And as you say, it's a loose opt-in, and it's a heavy price to pay. So those kinds of experiences make people very kind of nervous.
Retailers, with their email policies, have certainly tried to be clear and simple and direct. I don't know that they're, you know, sort of universally there yet. But really, you have to be honest. I mean, who really reads policy information? Our data shows that it's about 2% of consumers actually read policy information. So, you know, not only do people not read it, and those that do may understand it, maybe say if you take, you know, 80% of the 2% understand what they're reading when they're opting in, that I think it could be a real problem if, in fact, you're providing something that has maybe marginal benefit or marginal intrusion factor to a consumer, that you may find some backlash from that, too.
So the bottom line is the comfort that retailers are saying, we're only going to do this with consumers who opt in. It sounds like the takeaway from the conversation is that's not going to give them much protection.
Well, I think that, again, this is where it's really important to set standards in place now. And probably some of the better practices and even email collection are those companies that do the double opt-in where, okay, you sign up for email and then reply to this email from your email account, indicating that you, in fact, really do want to receive messages from us. And anybody who doesn't respond to that, we're not going to, you know, put you on our list. And, you know, so you, if you force the consumer to take a little bit more of a proactive approach, and you set that as a standard from the get-go, so nobody is able to game the system initially and get this huge list of people that they can market to, and, you know, I think that will, that can help it somewhat, and that can make it a little bit more of a tighter opt-in versus Paula's example where, you know, they can just completely spam a consumer for years and years.
We've done some work at Retail Systems Alert Group on retail data security. Is there some soft implication of these email addresses and phone numbers getting stolen and having not the damage of your identity being stolen, but in fact the damage of you being spammed to? Do you see that out there anywhere?
Anecdotally, I can speak to my own personal experience where I probably get 500 emails in my Yahoo inbox alone. Mm-hmm. But from a data standpoint, there hasn't really been as much in the way of stealing email addresses, because so many of the spammers seem to create their algorithms to just create as many lists as possible based on every possible permutation of letters and numbers that they can think of, and just kind of batch process and push messages out wherever they can.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the last thought on mobile marketing: how much of a difference are you seeing in European and Asian retail efforts than in the U.S.? And I only ask that because we've been hearing suggestions that certainly in Asia, these cell phones are much more sophisticated in their abilities to do a lot of the more cutting-edge capabilities, payment systems and scanning barcodes and whatnot. Do you see any truly global retailer having to have very different mobile strategies for the U.S. versus overseas?
Well, I think as more and more retailers go global, that's going to happen. I mean, you've got a company like Liz Claiborne, for example, that sees a lot of their expansion potential in Japan. And given what I understand to be the far larger use of mobile telephony in retail in Japan, I would imagine they would be required to put something in there, whereas in their stores here they wouldn't have quite so many.
Yeah, and I think you also have, you know, the technology is one thing, but the cultural implications are another. And any time a company is expanding across the globe, they have to take into consideration the cultural regional differences when they're creating any kind of marketing program. And though it has to be within the context of their brand, they still need to optimize that and to each local market, and using a cell phone versus an email versus a direct mail versus a store program is all going to have to tie into that in a particular way that's appropriate for the brand. So yes, cell phones being another delivery mechanism will certainly have to be considered differently than they are maybe in the U.S.